meal. Worldwide, there are approximately 70,000 deaths from the COVID-19 coronavirus and about 1.2 million confirmed cases. Americans brace for what the nation's top doctor warned Sunday would be the hardest hit and saddest week of their lives, while Britain assumed the unwelcome mantle of a deadliest coronavirus hotspot in Europe after a record 24-hour jump in deaths that surpassed even hard-hit Italy's. Britain's own Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been hospitalized 10 days after testing positive for COVID-19 in what his office described as a precautionary step. In New York State, coronavirus deaths rose to approximately 4,200, but there's a slight glimmer of hope. The spread is slowing. The state recorded a slight dip in fatalities Sunday compared to the day before. Governor Andrew Cuomo told reporters that it was too soon to say whether the pandemic had reached its apex and urged New Yorkers to remain vigilant. The state reported 594 new coronavirus deaths on Sunday. That is down from 630 new fatalities announced the day before. President Trump is pitching medicine for COVID-19 sufferers that science has not yet concluded is effective or safe for their use. He said, take it, according to the drug hydroxychloroquine. The U.S. Surgeon General is praising and raising the specter of the gravest attacks against the nation in memory, 9/11 in Pearl Harbor, to steel anxious Americans for impending sorrow in the age of coronavirus. And the government's top infectious disease expert is urging vigilant preparation for a virus that's unlikely to be wiped out entirely in the short term. This is VOA News. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that there has been a horrifying global surge in domestic violence, as fear of the coronavirus has grown far along with its social and economic consequence. The UN chief appealed on March 23rd for an immediate ceasefire in conflicts around the world to tackle the pandemic. And he said in a statement Sunday night, it is time to appeal for an end to all violence everywhere now. Guterres says that for many women and girls, the threat looms largest where they should be safest, and that's in their own homes. Greece has quarantined a second migrant camp on its mainland after a 53-year-old man tested positive for the new coronavirus. The country's migration ministry said the Afghan patient lives with his family at the Malakassa camp, along with hundreds of asylum seekers. He has been transferred to a hospital in Athens. The move comes just a few days after authorities also quarantined the Ritsona camp in central Greece after 20 people there tested positive for COVID-19. More than 110,000 people live in migrant facilities across the country, with 40,000 in overcrowded camps in five islands. Aid groups have urged the government to evacuate such facilities. Police dispersed crowds in London's parks on Sunday, as people were spotted flouting coronavirus lockdown rules due to warmer weather. Aerial shots showed that police were asking sunbathers in crowds breaking the social distancing rules to move on. Earlier on Sunday, British Health Secretary Matt Hancock said Britain will have to impose further restrictions on outdoor exercise if people kept on breaking lockdown rules designed to curb transmission of the coronavirus. Other European countries like Italy and France have imposed tougher restrictions on people leaving their homes. A tiger at the Bronx Zoo in New York has tested positive for the new coronavirus and what is believed to be the first known infection in an animal in the U.S. or tiger anywhere. That's according to federal officials and folks at the zoo on Sunday. The four-year-old Malaysian tiger named Nadia and six other tigers and lions that have all fallen ill are believed to have been infected by a zoo employee who was not yet showing any symptoms, according to the zoo. The first animal started showing symptoms on March 27th. All are doing well, however, and they're expected to recover. The zoo has been closed to the public since March 16th in the surging coronavirus outbreak in New York. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bati in Washington. Today is Monday, April 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The deputy governor of Kenya's Kilifi County will be arraigned in court today for failing to quarantine himself.
The Kilifi deputy governor may be charged under the Public Health Act, and if found guilty, the sanctions of a fine up to Kenya shillings 30,000 or imprisonment of a period of up to 3 years.
Malawi's main opposition party says a 10% salary cut for President Mutharika and his cabinet is not enough. Piles of trash in the streets of Accra as Ghana undergoes coronavirus lockdown. A Liberian opposition leader discusses his experiences in coronavirus quarantine, overcrowded prisons in Sierra Leone, and coronavirus. And thousands of Malian refugees return home amid escalating violence in Burkina Faso.
Mali is not secure as well, and many of these returning refugees cannot return to their places of origin. This was a hard decision for them to return back.
Baba Balok is a UNHCR spokesperson. The story plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kilifi County Deputy Governor Gideon Saburi will be arraigned in court today, Monday, after he was arrested on Friday while being discharged from hospital. Kenyan authorities said Saburi failed to quarantine himself after traveling from Germany early last month and later tested positive for COVID-19, thereby putting most Kenyans he interacted with in danger. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the number of COVID-19 cases in Kenya continues to rise.
Last week, the health ministry announced that Kilifi County Deputy Governor Gideon Saburi tested negative of the virus twice after being forced to quarantine at the Coast General Hospital and was said to face charges as per the Public Health Act. The deputy, who is among those who have recovered from the virus, had traveled from Germany and is said to have attended many public events before falling sick, putting lives of many at risk. Lawyer Bobby Mukangi says Mr. Saburi may be charged of only two accounts, either on the Public Health Act or constitutionally, to have him impeached for behaving in a manner that violates his leadership position.
The Kilifi deputy governor may be charged under the Public Health Act, and if found guilty, the sanctions of a fine up to Kenya shillings 30,000 or imprisonment of a period of up to 3 years. However, beyond the case under the Public Health Act, using the Constitution and particularly the chapter on leadership and integrity, may see that any Kenyan through Kilifi County Assembly seek ways through impeachment proceedings.
Kilifi County is among the areas in the country that report cases of the virus almost on a daily basis. Speaking yesterday Sunday, Chief Administration Secretary in the Ministry of Health, Mathew Mwangangi, said that most of those testing positive for the virus are in forced quarantine.
In the last 24 hours, we have tested a total of 530 samples, out of which 16 people have tested positive for coronavirus disease. Out of this number, 15 are Kenyans and one Nigerian national. This now brings the total number of those who have tested positive for the disease in the country to 138.
International flights remain suspended for 30 more days starting today, Monday. Speaking at the same time, Transport Cabinet Secretary James Macharia said that only cargo planes and those coming to evacuate foreigners will be allowed into the country.
After serious consideration of the situation, the government has extended the ban for another 30 days with effect from tomorrow, 6th April 2020. This suspension will not, however, apply to those flights that are coming in to evacuate foreign nationals. It also exempts cargo flights that are coming to the country to deliver goods.
Already, Kenya has recorded 4 deaths and 138 COVID-19 cases, being among the most affected countries in the Eastern Africa region. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, MCP, says President Arthur Peter Mutharika's announcement of a 10% salary cut for himself and his cabinet is insufficient. MCP spokesperson Maurice Mutale says the real problem in Malawi is corruption because he said the amount of money the president and his cabinet have stolen is much higher than what they are cutting from their salaries. President Mutharika announced over the weekend that the money from the 10% salary cut will be put towards fighting the coronavirus. Mutale says Malawians want lasting solutions to their problems, not coronavirus solutions.
While we appreciate what Peter Mutharika announced as ways of combating the coronavirus in this country, we have very serious reservations on some of what he had to say. On the issue of salaries, we feel that 10% cut from his salary and that of his cabinet members is too insignificant. What Peter Mutharika must know is that the problem is not how much salary he is getting or his cabinet members are getting. The problem is corruption, because the monies that these people steal is far higher than what they can cut from their salaries. Because after all, they have a very bloated cabinet with some of the portfolios which are very unnecessary. And the cabinet committee on the COVID-19 pandemic is receiving exorbitant allowances, up to 300,000 Malawi kwacha per sitting. So it's not just a matter of cutting 10% from one salary, but it is curbing corruption through which most money for Malawians is being lost.
Malawi is preparing for a rerun election, hopefully on July 2nd this year. I read one article which says that President Mutharika's approval has turned positive because of the way he is handling the coronavirus crisis. Is the Malawi Congress Party worried?
Malawi Congress Party is not worried at all. After all, what we are asking Peter Mutharika is why having to put all these relief measures now, as if people of Malawi had to wait for the coronavirus for them to be saved from the agonies that they have been passing through and they are still passing through now. For example, why couldn't this government employ all the medical staff and nurses way back? Where has the money come from all of a sudden? And why should we celebrate over temporary measures like this one? Why we want DPP out of government is because they have no plan at all. They have no vision. They have no clue at all. We cannot live on temporary measures. What we want are lasting solutions, sustainable policies for Malawi to be saved, and for its people to live a life that is fair.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. As residents in Ghana's capital, Accra, are told to stay indoors to help combat the spread of COVID-19, government and city authorities are tackling the waste that sits in open drains or in piles on streets. Stacey Nott reports from Accra.
For decades, Accra has had major issues with its waste management. Demand for services has not kept up with population growth. Research shows about a quarter of the trash Accra generates is not collected. It ends up in eyesore, littered through the streets, in drains, on the beaches, or is burned by a resident. The city's sanitation issues have been linked to annual flooding and have had health and economic consequences. In 2017, Ghana's president, Nana Akufo-Addo, pledged to make Accra Africa's cleanest city. This weekend, Ghanaian authorities have been cleaning the city while it is under a partial lockdown. Ghana has 214 confirmed cases of COVID-19, most in Accra. The point of the exercise this weekend, initiated by Ghana's Ministry of Sanitation and Water Resources, was to clear public spaces of accumulated refuse, to set a national standard for city cleanliness, and to support the fight against the COVID-19 spread, the ministry's director of sanitation, Anthony Mensah, said. The exercise is a joint effort between local and central government and the private sector. Ghana's National Security Services personnel were also part of the efforts, and images shared on social media showed them clearing out open drains in the city. With the empty streets, Accra's Mayor Mohamed Ajay Sowa said the lockdown proved an opportune time to focus on the central business district, he told VOA by phone. The exercise was not a silver bullet in attaining the president's goal, Sowa said, but it was part of continuing work to clean up the capital.
A significant effort had been put in to maintain the sanitary condition in the city centre. We know that we are not there yet, but there's been significant improvement in the city centre.
Richmond Kennedy Kwako, co-founder and president of NGO Plastic Punch, which raises awareness on the dangers of plastic waste and promotes sustainable waste management solutions, told VOA he was impressed to see residents also take part in the exercises.
It is the opportunity for local assemblies to keep the environment clean. Considering the pressure which might come on all our health facilities, it is the best way to prevent sanitation-related diseases. So it is surely a step in the right direction to keep it clean and also have a feeling of what a clean Ghana will be like.
Kwako, who spoke to VOA via a messaging application, said there are drastic differences across Accra's neighbourhoods in cleanliness and access to services. While the weekend cleanup efforts were a good start, Accra needs more focus on investment, access, education and awareness for long-term improvements, he said. This is something Williams Anafri also hopes to see. The medical doctor is also involved in recycling and sanitation initiatives and outreach in Ghana. He blames Accra's sanitation issues on poor city planning, a lack of enforcement and lack of awareness on sanitation issues. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 6th. A human rights group says overcrowded prisons in Sierra Leone could lead to rapid transmission of the coronavirus. The group, Advocate, is calling on the government to release pre-trial and vulnerable detainees, such as pregnant women, in light of the coronavirus pandemic. Sierra Leone recorded its first case of coronavirus last week, and Advocate's program manager, Julie Maria Nasise, says the female prison population is especially vulnerable.
Sierra Leone, the prison conditions are overcrowded. It is very, very overcrowded. Like the female correctional center is supposed to hold about 35. Currently, it's holding over 60. So they are overcrowded. For the male prison, it was supposed to hold 300 or more. It is now holding over 1,600. So you see there is great overcrowding. And these are potential areas, if not well taken care of, it exposes the inmates to catch up with corona.
And what percentage of these prisoners are pre-trial detainees? And how long do people usually wait for their trial?
The pre-trial detainees is very unpredictable and it is long. Today, in fact, we are just discussing some of those issues in one of our meetings with the Law Reform Commission. We are telling them our beneficiaries, the bike riders, the market women who are arrested for forced conversion. So we took them and they were explaining if they are taken to the prison while in, just on remand, some of their cases will take maybe a year or two before finally it is being given the sentence that is to be levied.
And these are non-violent offenses usually?
Yeah. Like in fact, the FC I'm talking about, that is fraudulent conversion I'm talking about. It's a debt, maybe you go to a microfinance organization, you took a loan, or somebody gives you a business item for sale, and the business goes bad, and that person goes to the police station, and that situation is being turned from being civil to criminal.
Has there been a government response yet, Julie, to Advocate and your partners, your announcement to the government?
No, we haven't got that yet. Instead, we've gone ahead engaging others, and many organizations have expressed concerns. News media have done a lot of interviews with us, asking us questions in relation to the press. But for the government, nobody has yet to contact them.
Julie, do you think that this will give energy to movements such as yours that are not just in corona times, but in normal times, always advocating for, better prison conditions, not just better, but radically different justice, really, systems for these women?
Yeah, we are still working around that. Advocate is still working around that. In fact, 2 days ago, we went to the Director General of the prison, informing him of the press release and other issues in connection to this pre-trial detention inmate. And we are still engaging.
That was Julie Marianne Cisse, program manager at Advocate. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. A Liberian opposition leader says President George Weah should be offering words of assurances to Liberians and providing solutions to the economic challenges posed by the coronavirus instead of making what the opposition leader calls jingles. President George Weah has made 2 songs so far to educate Liberians about the coronavirus pandemic. Alexander Cummings, leader of the Alternative National Congress Party, last week successfully completed a government mandate coronavirus quarantine after arriving in the country from overseas. He says he was glad to set an example for all Liberians to follow.
Being quarantined was fine. It was very isolating, but we made it work. We followed all the health protocols, and fortunately, I came out fine. I'm feeling okay. And I'm glad I set an example by going through that process so Liberians can know that this is a serious pandemic. We should all follow the guidelines and the rules. And I hope I set that example by going through the quarantine process. The whole process, as you know, was politicized, but that's okay. It is what it is. We've gone through it and we're feeling fine.
There was a bit of controversy about your personal security during your quarantine. The government felt then that you were seeking special privilege. Any comment?
We were looking for no special privileges per se. As you know, I'm a leading opposition leader. It's a fact that I do not trust our government to protect me because I believe I'm a threat to them. And we wanted to make sure our security followed all of the health protocols, just as all of the employees at the facilities do. There was a significant harassment of our security, but in the end, it was resolved, and it all worked out after a lot of public pressure from supporters and partisans and Liberians in general to make sure I was safe and secured.
President George Weah has made 2 songs, if I'm not mistaken, so far, educating the Liberian public about the pandemic. Is this enough? What else do you think can be done?
Look, I think it's okay if that's what he chooses to do, but it's not enough. It's not sufficient. Our president should be offering words of assurance, should be giving us direction, should be providing solutions to the economic challenges posed by the coronavirus. But there has been complete silence from the leader of our country. No briefings, again, no direction, no word of comfort, no word of support, no economic solutions to the challenges that are resulting from this virus. Instead, he just does a jingle. So it just doesn't show leadership, the kind of leadership the country needs at this very challenging and trying time.
Alexander Cummings is the leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress Party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. The UN Refugee Agency says escalating violence in Burkina Faso is driving thousands of Malian refugees to leave their camps and return to the war-torn homes that they fled in search of safety. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations reports violence in Burkina Faso has forcibly displaced more than 838,000 from their homes since January 2019. The UN Refugee Agency reports the escalating militant attacks also are affecting some 25,000 Malian refugees living in remote camps near the border separating the two countries. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA most of the refugees are choosing to return home because of the growing violence in Burkina Faso, judging it to be the lesser of two evils.
Mali is not secure as well, and many of these returning refugees cannot return to their places of origin. This was a hard decision for them to return back, and this decision is linked with the insecurity inside Burkina Faso.
Balor says the Gudubu refugee camp in Burkina Faso is essentially empty following attacks and ultimatums by armed groups. He says this prompted some 9,000 Malians who lived there to flee for their lives.
About half of the residents who reached Gao, Mopti, and Timbuktu regions in Mali cited insecurity and armed attacks as the reason to leave and felt they had no other option but to return. They arrived in Mali panicked, many with horror stories, and arriving on rented trucks or camelbacks with their families.
Balor says UNHCR is working with the Malian authorities to register the returning refugees. He says they are providing the returnees with shelter, relief items, and cash to support their immediate needs. He says the returnees also are receiving health and hygiene equipment as part of the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Uganda, where Ugandan Kitara Football Club head coach Mark Tinamwasiko has pledged to give half of his salary to his players to shield themselves from the possible financial difficulties expected as sports continues to remain halted. Lack of training and matches means players will have to do with daily training allowances as well as match bonuses, and this will definitely see a reduction in monthly wages. Meanwhile, the owner of Kenyan Premier League side Wazito FC, Ricardo Badua, has said his players and staff will continue to receive their full salaries despite the difficulties currently experienced due to the absence of matches. The Swede says he has the experience of being jobless and without money and will not let his players go through the same. Elsewhere in Sierra Leone, the Sierra Leone Football Association has announced a financial support to the country's leagues to remain afloat during this difficult time. SLFA says it will distribute almost $67,500 to the Premier League, Division 1 and 2 to help the clubs meet their financial obligations to players. In Ghana, the technical director of the Ghana Football Association, Uti Akentien, is not really happy that his contract was not renewed, even though he had earlier stated categorically that he will not apply for the job again. The Ghana FA wants a replacement for the veteran football administrator, whose contract expired in March. The FA has, however, opened applications for interested coaches to apply for the top job, and Uti Akentien is disappointed about that.
I've done so much on my own that now that people are coming in, where your work probably will be much seen by the whole country, or by people, you are now being put aside. That is the only worry that I have, but that notwithstanding, I'm sure I'll be used in one way or the other.
Nigerian athletes are lending their voices to the fight against COVID-19 pandemic, asking athletes and ordinary people to be guided by the directives of health authorities in preventing the disease. Evelyn Ahiato of the nation's female basketball team, Divine Odudoro, 100 meters dash and 200 meters track and field sprinter, Udunayo Adekunwoye, Africa and Nigeria number one badminton player, Anololapo Akpiori, and Oluwatobilola Amusan, the 2018 Commonwealth and 2019 100 meters hurdles African champion, are among athletes urging for compliance to curtail the spread of coronavirus.
We are fighting the war, and the medical staff needs our help in fighting this war.
And it is our responsibility to keep ourselves safe and keep the world safe.
Avoid handshakes, hugs, and crowded places.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very productive week.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.